to another episode of the Type Beam. This is episode 36, where we're going to be covering episode 8, called The One-Eyed Man. The lovely voice you hear is Andrea. Hi, how's it going? And with me are two of my favorite people in the whole entire world who are smiling so beautifully at me, Shannon and Fred. Shannon, how you doing, girl?
I mean, clearly not as well as you're doing. You're really killing it.
I am not under the influence of any alcohol.
No, you are just really enthusiastic about podcasting. That's okay.
Honestly, I'm very busy. So whenever I get to sit down and do a podcast, I really enjoy it. Mm. It's a moment where I can actually hone in on something. Mm. My work has been busy.
Oh, yeah.
Things are crazy.
Oh, yeah. I feel that.
Yeah. Fred, how you doing?
I am feeling better. I've been sick for the last, five, 6 days?
He had the man cold.
I had the man
cold. It was bad for both of us.
It was really bad for Andrea. It was fine for me, to be honest. She went and got me pizza, she got me meds, you know, all that kind of good stuff.
I am the most amazing girlfriend.
So if I break out into a hacking fit off the set, I'm really sorry, but it's still in the final death throes here.
So on Friday, knowing that Fred was in his deathbed after work, I went and got him wonton soup.
Oh, yeah, that really
That's the good stuff when you're sick.
And then on Saturday, on the couch, on his second day of death, he said, "Oh, I'm really feeling the need for a strawberry milkshake."
Oh, yeah. My God.
And I'm like, you know what, honey?
My throat is so sore.
I'ma go get out of my comfy PJs and go drive down the hill to buy you some strawberry milkshake.
Oh, my God.
And so it was done.
I tell you, though, that was the best damn strawberry milkshake I've had in a long time.
Mine was pretty good. And then on the third day of his sickness, this sounds like a parable from the Bible. Fred said, "Do you want some pizza?" And I said, "Nah, man, we're on a diet." But no. You know what I did? I pulled my phone secretly. Order that pizza. The pizza man came. He rang that doorbell and he was like, "Ooh, who's that?" And the pizza was delivered.
It's, you know, pizza. You know, some things never change, like Andrea being completely unable to say pizza. Completely unable.
I mean, if that's the only thing that's bad, I mean, that's pretty good. Pretty perfect.
So, just to be clear, she does teach English.
Mm-hmm. To international students.
Ah,
so they have no idea.
But then at least they should know what pizza is, because she's technically an international student.
Yeah.
They should understand her.
The fascinating thing is that now this generation of international students will only know pizza.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I'm proud of myself.
Excellent.
In this small corner of Canada.
Anyway, Type Beam. Yeah, let's get back to that. So, before we get into the discussion of the One-Eyed Man, there are some things to talk about. The first one is that season 5 has wrapped, which is awesome. We've been getting a couple pictures here and there of what's been going on. So I'm really excited to see where they take it. The other thing is that we actually have some awesome Typey merch. If you go to TeePublic, you'll be able to search Random Chatter, and through Random Chatter, you are able to find some Typey merch, whether it be hoodies, whether it be a mug, whether it be a shirt, a tank top, a hat, whatever your heart desires. Fred and I actually ordered some stuff over the weekend because there was a sale, so that's pretty exciting. Yeah. And then in terms of the Expanse, just a reminder that on Prime, The Expanse has a new feature, which is an X-ray content, where you get script breakdowns, visual effects breakdowns, in-show political ads, concept art, and an after-show moderated by her very favorite captain, Holden. Steven Strait.
His body snatcher. Don't forget, it's his body snatcher.
It's his body snatcher, yeah.
Stephen Strait.
Steven never comes out. Stephen.
Stevon Strait.
Whoa. It is the very French spelling of Steven.
Is it F-E-N?
Yeah, no. So they spelled it with a P-H.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So they butchered his name.
Fancy Steven. Perfect. It's Fancy Steven.
I'm going to lift my pinky for that one.
All right. Any other news? Any other things we want to discuss? We actually have a couple of things happening behind the scenes on the Tight Beam. So we're really excited to get those going and tell you when they happen. But it's a surprise for now.
I literally didn't know what you were talking about for a second. I was like, we're what now? And then I was like, wait.
Oh, what? We're doing?
Yeah, we are doing stuff, aren't we? Okay.
That thing with the people and the set and the thing and the people and maybe and things.
And yolaleeho.
Don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know.
Well, see, I clearly can't even remember what we're doing, so it's fine. You don't need to hide. You don't need to hide anything from me. I can't remember it anyway.
But you know what you do know and what you really like. Episode 8.
I mean, yes, totally
4.
True. This is my favorite episode.
I honestly, after watching it today, I was like, this is a really good episode. So I'm really excited to talk about it. So, as we always do, we love analyzing the title of the episode. This one is called The One-Eyed Man. During the episode, Murtry actually is talking to Fred, and he says, in the land of the blind...
He's talking to Fred? Oh. Wow, Fred looks really pale this season.
Did I say Fred?
You did. You totally did. Can we please keep Murtry? That in? That was so good.
Wait, so Murtry and Holden were talking.
Yeah, Fred was really pale this season, guys. Must be because we haven't seen him.
So... I have some fantasies.
Wow. That's her crack ship, everybody.
No. Okay. So, Murtry is talking to Holden, and Murtry says, and I quote, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. So, I did a little bit of research. There's a lot of one-eyed man people in this episode. But there's a proverb that has this line, and the meaning of it is that even someone with limited abilities or opportunities is dominant over and considered special by those who have even fewer abilities and opportunities. So the value of any ability depends on its commonness. And how many people have that ability. So if there's only one person with that ability, they're the ones that are seen as that king, the one all-knowing. So I thought it was very, very interesting. It is attributed to Desiderius Erasmus, a Renaissance scholar. So what do you guys think about this? I love the quote. I am a huge quote person, and it's funny because I'm teaching natural selection and about variation and about traits that are good and bad, and this is very relevant to it.
The only thing I really have to say is that it kind of goes in parallel with what you're saying, is that in playing cards, you have four kings, right? So you have diamond, spade, hearts, clubs, right? Mm-hmm. So each king has two eyes. The one king in the playing cards that has one eye is the king of diamonds. And I'm pretty sure he's also the only one without a weapon.
Oh.
Which is really interesting.
Interesting.
I gotta go break down a deck or something now.
I know, everybody after this is gonna be like, oh, let me bring that deck and see what this is about. Interesting. Yeah. What about you, Shannon?
Well, so my dad, he has a lot of fun, witty sayings. The one that I always think about, and it's not quite this one, but it's, he loves to talk about the blind leading the blind, constantly. Like, I swear to God, I hear the man say it at least once a day. So this was on the ones that, like, I would always, when I was younger, confuse the two of them. Obviously they mean very different things, but, you know, I think, I feel like Mercury would kind of feel more what my dad used to say because, you know, even though Holden can see, I think he considers himself more of a blind man. So he thinks Holden is the blind leading the blind.
Yeah.
But I really, you know, when I was in like Sunday school and all that, I used to always think about this line. Just because it really is like, it's just a fascinating concept because it's not something you would think about, that, you know, of course that guy is going to be the guy that people put in charge, make responsible. So it was just a really interesting title choice. And I think it applies to like a bunch of different situations in the show. So good choice. Good choice.
Yeah, for sure. And there is another version, an earlier version. It's found in Genesis Rabbah, a rabbinic text. It translates from Hebrew, "In the streets of the blind, the one-eyed man is the guiding light." So we have those connections, like Shannon said. You have Holden to the RCE and the Belters. He has to lead them through the blindness. And I mean, we can throw, Amos there too, because Amos is that powerful soldier. He kind of is more king-like, but he has to step down from that big, big burly kind of guy and just be submissive because he can't do anything that he usually does.
Right. And then Avasarala, you mentioned in the notes here as well that she could be seen as a one-eyed king. And not just figuratively speaking from, you know, only having one physical eye, but being so blinded by everything else that's happening. She's so focused in on her political fight that she's losing focus on everything else that's going around her, her relationship with her husband, the true issue that's happening on New Terra. The conflict with the Belters and what's going on with Mars, everything else. She doesn't seem to care. All she wants to do is win this election, and she doesn't care who she's stepping on.
Yeah. And I also see it as a reference to the fact that she sees herself as the only one who understands like the quote unquote real threat. Mm-hmm. And so like she can see herself as like, well, everyone is blind to like the threat of the rings, but like I'm the one-eyed king who sees, you know, the trouble that's brewing or whatever. Like I'm their leader and I'm going to remind them how scary this is and it's dangerous and blah, blah, blah. So I think she's like applying this kind of responsibility, not necessarily even responsibility, but this like viewpoint to herself. Yeah. And it's like leading all her decisions, even if they're not the right decisions or the right motivations.
Yeah. And I feel like while you were saying that, I also think of that idea of because you're still one-eyed, there is kind of like that quote-unquote, for lack of a better word, disability. There's a flaw. There's still that flaw. And Avasarala is still very flawed as a character. Holden is still flawed. We see it at the very end when he talks to Amos, and Amos didn't even have faith in him to be able to find a cure. So he is flawed. He's not the strongest. And when it comes to the one-eyed king, I also see Bobby in her situation. What's the bald guy that she's helping?
Mm.
I don't remember his
Esai.
Name. Esai. Yeah, so...
Got you.
They're walking into something blindly, and she's the only one that kind of sees something is not right. So she's that one-eyed king. She's still flawed because she doesn't see what's actually happening. But she has that ability to think about the repercussions. So, yeah, I love these analyses. So anything else in terms of the title?
Well, just the one conversation between Avasarala and Arjun where she's talking about, well, earlier in the episode, she made a speech to preside over the funeral, and she starts going off script, and she starts talking about her own son and how he was a Marine and he died, and she's using that as a leverage to gain political favor, and she's blind to the fact that she's doing that and she's hurting her own relationship with Arjun.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of people are blind.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Blind so, with passion. Yes. So this episode, since we've already gathered so much from the title, is written by Dan Nowak, directed by Sarah Harding. And so knowing this, and I mean, we've talked a little bit about how this episode made us feel, but is there anything else about the overall episode that we want to say before we jump into specifics?
I love it.
I enjoyed it so much.
I think there was a lot of chess pieces being moved. We're getting the final setup before the climax of the season overall. Nothing overly, using air quotes, exciting happened this episode, but we see a lot of really important things starting to take shape, and we see the potential of that happening.
We see a lot of tension build.
Yeah.
And we feel that tension. And at the very end of the episode, there's a little bit of that explosion of the tension happening, and we're left with a WTF was that. And I really enjoy that. What about you, Shannon?
I just really liked, there's a lot of really good material in here for everybody. But I think, and I don't know if I said this on the show before. I know I said it to you, Andrea. But I do got to say, I think this is Steven's best episode, which is nice to say. It doesn't happen very often. Mm-hmm. I mean, it does, but I think episodes where he gets to stand out don't happen very often. And so that was pretty cool. And there's a lot of like really interesting stuff to explore in that with him and Amos and even Murtry and LV.
Right.
So I was really drawn into the Illis storyline in this one and Drummer. I really love Drummer's line storyline in this episode as well.
Didn't even apply any of the One-Eyed King things to the...
I was trying to think of the best way to... Because I, you know, that's why when I threw in the notes, I was like, does anybody else have this? I was trying to find the best way to word Drummer's lining up with it. Because it's not quite the same as Holden or Vassarala, but, like, she still has that vibe. Like, she's the only one who's, like, seeing the Belter situation a certain way. But I can't quite figure out the best words to describe it to make it line up more with the one-eyed man kind of quote. Mm-hmm.
She sees the threat that Marco truly is. Maybe it's because of her connection with Naomi. But I don't think she knows or she I don't think she feels that everyone else around her. So Ashford just wants to kill him because she wants to kill him. But Fred Johnson, he wants to turn him into a lever. And making that statement, he is really screwing the Belters over. So it's really interesting to see how that's going to play out.
Yeah, so I'm really excited because, I mean, we know what's going to happen. And it's nice that there's a lot of foreshadowing in this episode of how blind people are. So I really enjoy it. So let's jump right into breaking down this episode a lot more. We're going to start with Earth. So on Earth, Vassarala is blamed and condemned for the Pisasu fiasco, and her Marine general resigns. At a memorial for the Marines who died on the ship, Vassarala delivers a heartfelt speech referencing her own son, also an Earth Marine who died in the line of duty, killed by the OPA. In a last-ditch effort gambit to salvage her re-election campaign, she leaks images of the environmental disasters on Illis, drawing public favor for her cautious approach to intergalactic settlement over Gao's eager expansionism. However, Abasarala's husband is alienated by her ceaseless political maneuver and her use of their son as a talking point. Holy macaroni. There's way too many big words in this. So.
Which one died? Just kidding. Oh, just kidding.
So. It's interesting because when the Marine general resigns, he mentions that she made a decision for a political gain, and I really never saw it as that. I never saw her decision as another way to win votes. I think she did it just for Earth. But now everybody's perceiving it as just her doing something blindly for votes.
So perception in politics and leading is more important than the decisions you make sometimes, which is really unfortunate. Now, I think in reality that this general would have never quit if he was this against the action or decisions that she made. He would have argued more for, like, back when she was asking for solutions, he would have been advocating for one solution over another. He would have said, no, going on board the ship would be murder, it would be a failure, and these are the risks, and he would outline it more and be more in favor of a missile strike,
right?
Which I think was the other option. And we never got that from him in the earlier episode. So for him to come back and say this is for political gain and not for the protection of Earth, I didn't really feel that was true. So I kind of personally felt that was a little bit of a misstep for this episode. Just that general storyline, I thought that should have been played out a little bit stronger as a lead up to this moment. For him to give his resignation, maybe he could have delivered it differently, just saying that because of the failure of my team, I am going to resign.
Right.
Because ultimately, he proposed a solution. He proposed two. We could do a missile strike. We can board. These are our options. And his team should have performed better, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. It didn't really have any buildup, and so it didn't really feel like it was actually genuine. It felt like just a reason to make her feel worse and have him resign. But the other thing is that I do kind of see where her political maneuvering is coming in, because her repeated mantra, and I didn't really think about this till I rewatched it, her repeated mantra was, we need a head on a spike. That was her whole thing. Like, yeah. The thing that will redeem me for this, I forget which mistake it was, destroying the Sojourner. We bring Marco in, we bring him to Earth Justice, we make an example of him. That's been her thing the whole time. So, like, while I can see that's, like, she leaned towards the boarding because it was a higher chance of her bringing him in, right, rather than either letting the Pazuzu go or missile strike. I don't think the McCourt's angle, like having him object to it, had enough, you know, build up for the payoff. He didn't really argue anything. He didn't really say what he chose. He just said, well, here are our options, and then they went for it.
In our society today, and I'm not even talking in The Expanse, we would never kill a transport ship that had civilians on it to kill an enemy leader.
Well,
if we knew there were civilians on it, and a great number of civilians on it, we would not shoot that ship down.
We wouldn't, but other countries might.
I mean, we as a society, a global society, so United States, Canada, the European Union, a lot of these countries would not make that decision, in my opinion.
Of course.
If it was a military vessel, sure. Yes, absolutely we would. We would destroy that ship. Based on whatever deciding factors. But because there were civilians on that ship, I think she made the right call to go for a capture. The only other option at that point would be to wait until it reached a certain dock, or if that some situation changed and just were following closely. But then you're at risk of losing Marco, and that's why she made that decision. So I'm still under the impression that she made the right decision.
Yeah, I don't think she made the wrong decision, but I do think that there is some "this will get me points" maneuvering going on. Right. Like, not so entirely.
What you're saying
not
is she
entirely
made the right decision, but for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, or partially for the wrong reasons, because we do know she does have, like, the good of Earth at heart. But she keeps making these maneuvers and then defending it by saying, well, I have to retake. Like she says later on about the leaking the images from New Terra, I needed to change the narrative. So yes, I made it about New Terra because it shouldn't have been about this mistake I made. It should have always been about New Terra. Like, it was like she keeps seeing every misstep as a blow to her pride instead of, like, you know, people got hurt. And she did see it during the memorial. Like, you could tell she genuinely saw it during the memorial. Right. Like, I don't think she was lying to Arjun when she said she felt like what she said was true. But considering the fact that she immediately went and did something that was a very obvious political maneuver, of course he wasn't going to see it as genuine because of what he just saw. So that's what's happening to her now, is now the people who are closest to her aren't going to see those genuine moments because they keep getting followed up by something that is to get her ahead, or, you know, to please her pride, to please her ego.
It would be interesting. And so, as a story point, just to understand what decisions she would have made in this exact same scenario if it wasn't like a campaign year.
Right.
Yeah, because this storyline didn't exist in the book. So there's nothing to consider. There's nothing to compare. There's no POV chapters to help us really get in her head and see her thinking.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I find it very interesting. And I really liked what she said to her husband, that, like, I played the way you guys wanted me to. Don't be upset because I didn't play
by your rules.
But yeah. And it's true. You're telling me to do one thing. I don't do it specifically the way you actually wanted me to do it. And now you're getting mad.
Right.
So I get her stance on it. But she can sometimes be very brutal with the way that she executes things.
Yeah, small gestures aren't always her best things. I think she struggles with, like, being truly empathetic in the moment. Right. Sometimes, not empathetic, but, like, fake sympathetic, even, I should probably say. So that if she had gone and paraded in front of all these voters to try and convince them that what she did was the right thing, there's a great chance she would have gotten annoyed and said the wrong thing. She does that all the time. We love her for it. You know, I'm not going to fault her. That's just the way she is. She's very, like, verbally impulsive. That's how she's always been. And so, you know, when she sees this other opportunity that possibly could get her what she wants, even though it's not actually connecting with people, it's making them afraid. Like, I think Arjun had a very good point. Like, you're just, now you're inciting fear. You're scaring people rather than connecting with them. Like, all they wanted her to do was connect with people, and she finally did it and then followed it up by scaring everyone.
Exactly. She's an interesting character.
She's very complicated.
I also feel like she's weak in the political aspect, but she also seems to have lost a lot of herself. So I find it very interesting. All right. Anything else about Earth? No? No? Moving on? All right. So Mars. On Mars, Bobby becomes suspicious of Asai's contact for a mysterious new job and opts out, trying to persuade him to drop the job as well. However, Asai is preoccupied with the potential payout, which would allow him and his families to migrate through the ring to better opportunities.
Again, I'm hating this Bobby storyline. I'm not a fan of her betraying Mars. And you can see it in the episode. She doesn't like it either. So she has a confrontation with her brother or cousin.
No, nephew.
Nephew. She has a confrontation with her nephew where he now has a job and he's working on the terraforming project. And she is proud that because of her actions earlier in the season, he has turned the other foot. He was going down the criminal way and he is now back on the straight and narrow. And she almost seems jealous of it or envious.
I got some guilt and I got some heavy guilt in that scene.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I got some way heavy guilt. Just like, oh, man, he's thanking me for inspiring him to be a better person. And meanwhile. Mm-hmm.
So I think this might be the catalyst that gets her to turn back to the straight and narrow. And I'm really curious to see how this plays out in the rest of that storyline. So she's gone down the wrong way. She's done some misgivings, and now she's seeing the fruit of that is not as good as it could have been.
I think her conversation with Isai at his apartment kind of woke her up to some stuff. Because while she's been doing this, like, pretty criminal enterprise, as far as she knows, is vaguely, you know, not, I'm trying to think of the word, like, it's not really bothering anyone kind of black market stuff. But I think once she has that conversation with him, she starts to feel guilty because, you know, in the next scene with Thomas, she starts like almost projecting onto him. Like, it felt pretty clear that she was projecting her guilt about turning her back on Mars onto his, like, still pretty strong loyalty to Mars. Because they have that conversation where she says, you know, everything we fought for feels worthless now, or whatever she said to him exactly. And he said to her, you don't really believe that, do you? And then she really, you see in her face, she doesn't really believe it. Mm-hmm. I think that Isai put this idea that isn't necessarily wrong into her head, and now she's afraid of that truth, that Mars could actually die and her loyalty might have been for nothing now. It might mean absolutely nothing. And so she kind of, especially after, you know, she ran to David and he was so hopeful, and she's realizing that around her, like her home that everyone has fought for so long, that as you said, the dream of Mars is dying. Like, I think she believes it's true and projects her guilt about that and her fear about that onto Thomas, who's just trying to get her to come with him so they can be good Martians doing the good work together.
Well, I think she's starting. Sorry, I was just going to add on to that. I think she's starting to realize that. Yeah, so the dream of Mars in her mind has always been unquestionable. Mm-hmm. And now that's being chipped away, and she's finally starting to realize that, hey, this may actually be true, and she's getting upset.
Yeah.
So she doesn't want anybody to go away from Mars or just physically leave the area like Thomas. She doesn't want to go with him. She wants to continue the good work on Mars.
Mm. Yeah, and that line, that last thing they said, the last things they said to each other really hit me. When she told him to go and see what's left when he comes back.
Yeah.
Right.
And he says, well, me too, but I hope you're here too.
Yeah.
Like, that was like a lot from both of them, especially Bobby, because that was like the least hopeless thing I think I've heard her say so far in season 4. And it's just kind of wild that we've watched her kind of, her rock solid foundation kind of crumbling as she watches and hears Mars dying around her.
Yeah, it's interesting to see how that plays out, because she could spiral if she wasn't strong enough, and that could turn into a pretty ugly situation, but I think she's stronger than that.
I think you guys said most of the things that I wanted to say about this one. It's still not my favorite place, but I really like the talk that she had with Isai about how he had a dream to provide and be there for Mars for his children.
Mm-hmm.
Why break his back if he could just give them everything that he always dreamed of in another planet? So I understand it. As an immigrant, I do get that. Why break your back in a place where you can move somewhere else and you'll have all the resources that you need? So I respected that conversation that they had.
But like Bobby said, you can't leave Mars if you're dead.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So do what you need to do and leave if that's what you want to do, but don't do it out of proceeds of crime, is basically what she's saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Anything else?
I did love that whole, I didn't know you had a family.
Yeah.
And the kid just, the daughter pushing the son, like, really aggressively for no reason is pretty good.
That's relatable.
Mom, Charlie's cheating. She pushed me. Like, it's so good.
Oh, I get that relationship. All right, so let's go to Medina Station. I think this is one of the most interesting and one of my favorite parts of this season. Again, I don't know how many more times I have to say it. I've talked to my girlfriends about it, and they love Ashford now. And I love him so much. And I love his relationship with Drummer. So, after the destruction of the Pazuza, Drummer and Ashford both resigned from their respective positions, upset that their information led to senseless Belter deaths. Ashford plans to hunt down and kill Marco and Aros independently and asks Drummer to join him. But she declines, weary of politics. So one of the things I find very interesting in this episode is that in order to find peace, we need to kill our people. And that is such a dark and twisted way of doing this. But this is something that we commonly see in war. In order to have peace, we need to sacrifice our people. And that's just so sad. And for the show to just naturally just weave it in and just make it seem like common sense, it's so good. And then I understand Drummer's viewpoint and her hatred for this type of mentality, and I feel for her. I feel for her struggle. I feel for her anger, sadness. I love that quote. It's like when Ashford goes and meets her and he's like, oh, I've been looking for you in every bar, and she says, I only drink when I'm angry, not when I'm sad. And I thought that was such a beautiful moment, because this is her people and she's always been part of that. And I really commend Kara for putting herself and who she is as an Aboriginal woman into that Belter role. I see a lot of who she is in Drummer, and I love her for it.
Yeah, I think, and along that line, I think we really need to talk about what she said to Ashford.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been waiting to talk about this. So Ashford says to her, we need the inners if we want a future of peace. And Drummer says to him, the Mormon pictures in my office always made me laugh, celebrating the pride of the inners, a history of coveting another's homeland and killing to take it. And having Kara, who is Ojibwe, which is a First Nation tribe, having her say that, her be the character that says that, is so powerful, because that is exactly what Europeans did when they came to the Americas. And what they continued to do well into the 1800s, especially very much so in the United States, to the point where we still don't really talk about the effect that we have on Native Americans to this day, on my side of the border. But the fact that that line was delivered by her was such a powerful and incredible choice. Mm-hmm. And it was just really, it's definitely one of my favorite moments of the entire season. And everything that Kara brings to Drummer from her own history and her own perspective has always been so fascinating and interesting, because it comes from a place of truth. Yeah. And so I just, that line just, oh man, that line is so good.
There is definitely a lot of power behind that. Absolutely. Mm. One of the things that I kind of took as a bit of a foreshadow was Ashford wanting to kill Marco and going after to kill him. You kind of get that feeling that this is going to backfire.
Mm-hmm.
And just the fact that Drummer doesn't want to join him and just the way that they're framing everything, he's going off on a solo mission and you don't think he's coming home. He turns down the bottle to save that to have when he gets back. But you get that sense that he doesn't want to come back. That this is a one-way trip.
And there's a line that unfortunately I didn't catch the first time. I'd like to see his pretty face floating out in airlock.
Oh, that I noticed think that.
Will come to bite us in the butt one day. But yeah, I wrote in my notes too that like the look on Drummer's face, that entire goodbye scene was a face that like could tell this was goodbye.
Yeah.
And the fact that she looked back and he didn't, like he was pretty confident that he was going to be successful.
Yeah.
But you can tell that something is telling her that he won't be.
The blind-eyed man, one blind whatever.
You're killing it.
But
you're killing it.
That's it. She knows. She has it in her inside that something's not going to go right.
Mm.
And I think that Ashford is very blind to it. He's very cocky about it. And that leads to blindness. I find that very interesting. I love this.
Fred's
story.
Back. We didn't talk about Fred. Fred showed up.
No kidding.
Fred just showed up.
Do you like how the way Drummer said hi?
Yeah, yeah. So she was as annoyed as we were that Fred has not made an appearance in a long time.
Oh, yeah.
And she decked him. She decked him good.
Oh, she's got him good.
You know, yeah, and she was told, you know, she was like, you know, told not to be too angry. And she was like, well, I'm not. And I was like, yo, this is so good.
If this is not
she was like, yeah,
angry.
I did hold back. Mm-hmm. So good.
I don't know what to think of Fred Johnson. He's kind of like my Ashford now. Like, I understand where he's coming from, but I just don't agree with his decisions. So, we'll have to see how that goes. All right, anything else with this beautiful storyline? No? We good? All right. Let's get to the blind people. All right, so, Illis. In orbit around Illis, the crew of the Rocinante and the Barbicola successfully tether the ships together in the feat of engineering, saving them from the planet's gravity for a time. Stranded below, on the surface of Illis, Dr. Okoye determines that the large green slugs, which are literally crawling out of the walls all around the alien structure in which the floodwaters have the settlers trapped, secrete a powerful neurotoxin that kills humans on contact. To make matters even worse, all of the colonists are now blind, with only Holden immune. As blind settlers wander too far from their bases, more are killed by the parasitic slug. Many begin to despair, with Amos in particular showing a major psychological toll through the bond. Though he bonds with Wei, Okoye determines that Holden's immunity is the result of his cancer medication, which he must take for the rest of his life after he was exposed to radiation on Eros. She devises a cure and is soon able to restore sight for the colonists. After a long absence, Holden has another vision of Miller, who screams at him. Boy, oh boy. This was an interesting episode for Illis.
Where do we even start?
It was a lot. Yeah, it's a lot, isn't it?
A lot.
So, we could... Go ahead.
I was going to say, how about this? Every time I go to the emergency room or I go see a doctor that's not my normal family doctor, The first mm-hmm. question they always ask is, what medications are you on?
Yep. Okoye failed as a doctor.
Well, she's not a medical professional.
No, she's not. I'll give her that.
She's she's like a biologist.
I wouldn't know to ask you what you've been taking.
But she wants to know what's different about him.
Well, his eyes.
His
hair. Yes.
She could have started with a physical exam.
Oh. Whoa.
And then she would have discovered the injection point.
Well, I think they've kind of established that for the most part, most people aren't on regular medications because a lot of things can be fixed fairly easily by medical advances. So I think that she wouldn't even think about it because no one's seen him on any medications. No one's considered that he could be on them because most people just aren't. They focus on like weirdly more obvious things. Most people don't know he was irradiated on Eros either.
Most people take pills in private. They don't take them publicly. So I wouldn't know if you're on any medications, for example. I don't see you taking pills in front of me, and that's probably the same goes for most people.
Well, I mean, these people are also in a tight space all together. You know what I mean? Fair. Like, it's a very different situation than, like, us right now or any person right now. They're living in very close quarters, which is how this blindness spread so quickly in the first place.
I'm just suggesting that they push this storyline a little bit too long and perhaps could have... I think they would have discovered it faster.
They didn't discover it any faster in the book, though.
Regardless. It's interesting how they come about understanding what's happening with Holden. Yes, I feel like from the very beginning, just as a biologist, as a scientist, like just, okay, Holden, tell me everything about you from just everything. When did you reach puberty? Blah, blah, blah. Like you'd get a medical record, but doesn't happen. Again, I feel like so many factors could have been affecting, Elvie during this. Like she's not thinking clearly. She's blind AF. So this is where we get it. I really enjoy the interactions between Holden and Elvie. I think that their acting throughout this whole thing was phenomenal. I really enjoy the part where he's telling her that on Eros he got shot with a massive dose of radiation, and she puts her hand on his shoulder, and he's like, "Oh, thanks." And like, "No, I don't need your hand. Do you have something on your shoulder?" I thought it was so funny.
Yeah, he looks so offended, too.
Yeah.
She just shoved my hand away.
I really enjoyed the whole discovery process of how they found out. Sticking the needle in his eye and getting the sample.
I couldn't watch that.
Yeah, would you needle yourself in the eye if it could save people?
No. Of course I would.
Sorry. Screw everybody.
Andrew's immediately like, no. Hell no.
Everyone does.
That was disgusting. Sorry. Not sorry.
Shoot, everyone. Naomi, come pick me up. Thanks.
See y'all. Bye. Bye.
Bye.
Nope.
Nope, no stabby.
No stabby.
And then that big aha da moment that, you know, oh yeah, I'm on Alka-Seidels for the last whatever. It goes to show that it's been such a routine for him that he doesn't even feel it necessary to say.
Yeah. Mm.
Of course, me as a viewer, it's like, duh, it is the drugs!
Yeah, I think me knowing too much about this storyline kind of takes away from it for me. It's like that mystery is like, you know, I mean, I feel like I should have known, though. Like, I mean, as I remember when I watched the first episode... And they showed that very long shot on his little injector thing with the drug name on it. I was like, yeah. Oh, that can't possibly be important later, could it?
That's not a foreshadow.
That's not. Medicine is not.
I don't know what it is, but I've read all the books twice, three times, four. I don't know. But when I watch the show, it feels like I just completely forget what I read.
Mm-hmm.
And when they got to that moment, I was like, holy beep! I was so invested in it. I was so excited.
I'm sitting there going like, come on, guys. Come on, you're this close. Come on. Come on.
So mind blown. I was like, wow.
To be
so
fair, good. When I was reading the books the first time, and I was going through this particular novel, I really thought it had to do with the radiation than anything else. So him being irradiated,
being they didn't sterile want him.
And other things. It's probably related to what damage the cancer has done to him, or the radiation has done to him.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think it would be the medication that he was taking for it.
Yeah. Do you think that they would think he was too nasty to eat?
Dirty.
Nasty. I mean, he is very dirty, so he is also nasty.
I didn't see any shower set up. And
no, they all of them look dirty as heck. They all so dirty. I think, and what's really funny is now that they're posting makeup pictures and stuff, and you see how dirty Steven is in normal light in these scenes. Like, he almost looks like he's going gray. They put that much, like, dirt in his hair. It's ridiculous. It's so nasty looking. But, yeah, it's just, that whole scene is just really good. And, like, the build-up and the start of it, how his desperation after what he sees from Amos to find a way to fix things. Because, you know, Holden, he always has to fix things. He can't let anything go unfixed. He can't leave anyone behind or let anyone get hurt. And he's so driven to it that, like, it leads her to be like, fine, I'll consider something else. We'll figure it out. Because, like, while everyone else has kind of resigned themselves to it, he refuses to. He needs to figure out what's going on. He needs to fix things.
Yeah.
Well, talking about Amos, like, he can't handle it. Not being able to see, he can't be who he is. And he's done. He decides to walk off and basically give in and commit suicide through these slugs. Holden finds him, confronts him, and he wants to basically just take him out for it.
Yeah, I think he got very triggered in that second.
But I understand Amos. He's always been a man of control. And the moment he doesn't have control, he'd rather die than go through and suffer.
Mm-hmm.
So I get that struggle. I thought Wes did amazing showing how crazy he could get. I really enjoyed it.
I always saw Amos as a man that would go down fighting. And without his sight, he can't fight anymore. So in that scene, you could kind of see him wanting to fight with Holden. Not to hurt Holden, of course, but to just go down fighting.
Right.
I'm going to attack and lash out for you to put me down.
Yeah. And I really, you know, their relationship has come a very long way since season one. When Amos once told Holden that he would love to just let him go and watch him float off into space without a helmet on.
And now this he can say whatever he wants.
Yeah, this episode really illustrated how far they've come. And I said this on Twitter when the writers did their live tweet of the episode. But, you know, we've always had this like kind of idea of like this hyper masculinity, especially in like genre fiction.
Yeah.
It's very hard to find like truly close and tender male friendships. And so these scenes with them where Holden's being very gentle, speaking very gently, you know, kind of being careful of where he touches and things like that. And then saying things like, I can't do this without you. like he did in the last episode, and telling him literally to his face, you know, I can't lose you in this one. It just kind of was really good to see how far their relationship has come.
Right.
And see how important that they really are to each other. And that last scene is just so good when he's like, yo, bring me my blowtorch. He's like, yo, get it yourself. And then, you know, I love that. He's like, he literally goes, you can get it yourself. And just that little bit like, well, now I can say I took you in a fight. And he's just so happy. He's like, you can say whatever you want. Like, yeah. It was just really, really good to see all of this kind of culminate into this really beautiful scene where, like, Holden helps him back and is very careful with him because he knows something is wrong and he doesn't want to push it. It was just really nice. It's nice to see, you know, guys being dudes, you know?
One of the big struggles in this episode for Amos was he didn't think Holden could pull this off, using air quotes. And now that Amos has seen him pull this off, his faith and trust in him and his ability as captain is going to be unshakable at this point.
Yeah.
And Amos will do anything in his power to back him up.
Yeah. Yeah, Holden really scary. Emotionally.
Hmm? Which is very scary.
Very, very scary.
Murder Snuggles.
I just, you know, this episode really put Holden through the emotional ringer. He was having a very hard time at the beginning of the episode, and I was wrong. I realized upon watching the last episode we covered that it wasn't episode 7 that had the other weird phone moment in it. It was this episode.
Yeah.
So I felt really stupid after the last episode. I was like, oh man, I said there was another weird phone conversation episode 7 and there wasn't. Oh no, they're gonna kill me, man. I was so on this. And then I realized it was in episode 8. But, you know, he's carrying bodies to this mass grave at a pretty regular basis, it's implied. He's constantly got to lead people back and forth from places. He's very obviously
he's
not sleeping.
He's got to take people to the bathroom.
He's got to take people to the bathroom. He's very alone. Obviously not sleeping. And it's just, like, he's going through a lot. And he sounds so exhausted by the time he finally, like, has his, like, breakdown outside the RCE camp and, you know, starts insisting they find a cure. And so when you get to the end of that scene and the scene where he calls Naomi at the end and just the absolute relief that's like, just, you can see it. You can see like Holden completely change at the end of that scene with Elvie. And I love that line when she says, you know, it's been a long time since I've seen you smile.
Yeah, I thought that was cute.
Because she literally can't see, but she can tell that that she can even feel that his energy, his whole deal has changed. But I think what was really great from going from like hopeless Holden at the beginning, when he's telling Naomi, you know, one of us deserves to have something good happen, you know, like, he's so hopeless at the beginning of the episode. And at the end, he's saying, you know, good news is contagious. And, you know, Naomi and his exchange when she says something good finally came out of you being on Eros.
Yeah.
And then he says, we just bought ourselves more time. And she says, and we'll just keep on doing that. Like the absolute arc of that from like hopelessness and helplessness to just this hope again, that they can maybe make it out of here alive. It felt really earned.
Yeah.
And especially for Holden, who really, somebody just give him a nap and a coffee and let him, you know, relax a little bit. But it just felt super earned and I appreciated it.
I agree with that.
Absolutely.
Anything else in terms of Ellis?
Naomi.
Well, we've got to go into
the
orbit.
Plan to save the Barba Bacola. Oh. Which didn't spend a lot of time on, but it was very successful from what I understand.
It was.
Yeah.
There isn't too much I have to say about it. It was nice to get a win.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another win. Because, I mean, Holden cured. But as of right now, there's nothing I want to say about the Barbacola.
The only thing I really want to point out is Naomi as a very, very brilliant engineer. would not be standing next to the cable during the pull.
Yeah, I feel like she would be smarter than that.
If that cable were to snap, she would be in two pieces. We'd have two Naomis.
I don't think Colton would mind, but...
I thought it was very pretty and very cool to watch. Those are my main thoughts. There was also that line like, wow, I'm glad you know, I'm grateful you hate your family so much because it means we're all going to live. That was, I didn't catch that the first time. So I saw it today. Yeah, I was like, good. Oh my God.
So we have this absolutely great moment where they're able to get the Rocinante and the barb connected and they're able to like, Alex is like, it's working. We're gaining altitude. And that's absolutely amazing. And then not, what, 2 minutes later, we have Mercury up to the Israel. And basically, I don't remember the words exactly, but were you able to weaponize the shuttle? With a proximity bomb or proximity
You almost forget.
Or something like that. So you're like, oh, you felt so good for them. And it's like, damn it.
You almost forget there's a plot.
Yeah.
And he's a wily boy. Yeah, wily boy. He's like, oh, finally, I've got some control back. Time to blow stuff up.
That pisses me off.
According to Mercury, Holden and the Rocinante are supposed to be neutral, and they are interfering. And so he wants to put a stop to it.
Yeah.
It's like, you just got your eyesight back. Why?
Be grateful, because you wouldn't have gotten it back if it weren't for Holden.
Exactly.
Holden also just... took you to the bathroom, you jerk.
Probably did.
Why couldn't Holden just throw a slug at the guy?
Oh, a slug fell on him. Oh my God, how did this happen? Just like, as he's walking to the bathroom.
That Harry Potter musical?
Yeah.
We should do one for the expanse.
we'll throw that in with the conspiracy theory episode. That'll be a good one. We'll make that a double recording night. It'll just be pure chaos.
It would be sanity.
So I'm gonna say this like I didn't forget a huge plot point and ask you guys, where were you when you heard the Miller scream and how did it make you feel?
Well, I was wondering where Miller was. Like, obviously, the investigator has been involved in getting the whole planet set up. Right. And all these weird things starting to happen again. And then all of a sudden he's gone. It's been, what, 8 episodes, 6 episodes? Whatever, since we've last seen Miller. Where has he been? And so just like Holden, it's like, where the hell have you been?
I enjoyed it. It was like he was glitching.
When Miller screams.
I thought it was scary. It was like a horror movie.
Yeah, so...
I thought it was creepy.
It was really creepy. I was at my friend Ed's place watching it. And so we watched... We had gone to the premiere party. We watched episode 7 because the screeners only went up to episode 6. So he was like, do you want to watch a couple episodes? I'm like, sure. So we watch episode 6. Like, do you want to watch another one? Sure. By the end of this episode, it is like 1:30, 2 o'clock. And the scream happens. And I got so scared and unsettled. And then Ed goes, all right, I think that's it for tonight. I'm like, you want me to go to bed after that? You want me to go to bed and dream about that scream? Because no, like the glitchiness freaked me out. And then the scream happened and I was like so unsettled. I was like, I'm never going to sleep. I can't sleep now.
What the hell just happened?
Like, that's all I'm going to think and dream about is that scream. And I can't do it.
Fabulous.
I remember looking at him and I'm like saying straight up, I can't go to bed after that. Like, I was like, where's your cat? I need a snuggle. I can't do this. Like, I was really unsettled by it.
It was a really good moment.
Yeah. So, it's... Oh, boy.
This episode just had so many good moments, and I loved it.
So much. So good.
Yes. All right. Anything else? No? Okay. All right, so Shannon, why don't you talk a little bit about the after show focus?
Be as fast as possible. So the after show, this one had Ty, Frank, Narain, Shankar, and Kara G and Bern Gorman with Steven, obviously. And they asked about, you know, where the slugs came from. Or not the slugs, the organisms in the eyes. And Ty said he was inspired by the trope that when you go to an alien planet, the alien planet wants to eat you.
Oh, okay.
So they kind of played, but they did something a little different, like a little more realistic, which is like an organism that we don't know making a home in our eyes because there's no predators there and all that jazz. They also talked about Mercury's reaction to it, his fear and his, as we talked about last week, loss of control. Well, not last week, loss of control and how much it freaked him out. We were right.
We're
amazing. They also talked about how he sees it as a way to go for a power play or a play for power, whatever it is. You know what I mean? He sees it as a way to move for power.
I was like, are we playing hockey now? Power play.
There was also a really great quote. I wrote it on the last page and I realized I wasn't on it. I couldn't tell who Byrne was attributing the quote to, if he was talking about Ty or Steven. But he said that one of them said on set, I'm pretty sure it was Ty, it's a great leveler when one guy has to take us all to the bathroom, which is very funny. That must be very, like, you know, dumbs down your ego a little bit when only the guy you hate has to help you to the bathroom.
He's the hall monitor.
He's the hall monitor. That was a very powerful delivery from Holden when he said, I'm going to take you all to the latrine, and then I'm going to take the belters, and then I'm going to take you. And he's just like, thank you, Captain. I was like, whoa, that was a power move.
Tail between his legs.
Like, Holden's right in his face, and I was like, oh boy, that's an angry man.
I had tacos. Can I go first?
he's like, after this, now you gotta wait, honey. Now you gotta wait. They also talked about, they kind of turned it into a drummer versus Ava Sorala thing, but they had started talking about drummer and how she was angry at Fred, and how a theme this season was pushing people to a line to see if they could cross it. And Ava Sorala, as we know, does cross it, but drummer can't. And Kara talks about how Drummer has a hope inside her that she can't let die. Also, we see that McCourt can't, you know, he gets to a line, he can't cross it.
Right.
They also talked very quickly about Miller and for the first time, we, the audience, and Holden is seeing that reboot kill cycle that is mentioned earlier in the season, where every time he does something, like, it reboots him and he's a little different. And how Miller is kind of almost like a prisoner in his own being. Whew. There's also extra X-ray content, like a Gal political ad called Looking Forward, blaming Ava Sorala and leaders like her for Earth's situation, and why would anyone look to the past? There's also concept art of the taking and retrofit of the Nauvoo, renders and notes for the behemoth and its weaponry after the retrofit, and concept art of the control room before and after the retrofit.
Very cool.
Very cool.
Awesome. So if there's nothing else to say, we can start wrapping up the show. Again, one of the best, and I'm really looking forward to the next couple of episodes. So, if you have something to say, if you enjoyed this crazy episode and that weird introduction that we did, you can find us online. You can email us at thetypebeam@randomchatter.com. Leave us some comments of what you liked, what you didn't like. Do you agree with things? Do you disagree with things? We love to know what you think about what we say. You can also follow us on Twitter at thetypebeam, at randomchatter. You can find me on Twitter at katzbearz. That's KATZBEARZ. Fred, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at FreddyWonKenobi. That's FreddyWon Kenobi.
And Shannon?
You can find me pretty much anywhere at ShankBeezy.
And you can also find us on Instagram at Random Chatter, and also on randomchatter.com, where we have a bunch of other podcasts, not just about the type beam. We talk about superheroes. We talk about different movies that are coming up or have already happened. We have shows about Star Wars and many other things to keep you entertained.
If you're looking to join... Go ahead.
Whoa.
Wow. I was jumping ahead.
See, the introduction is a mess. So is the closing.
Take two.
Take... One thing you can do to help us spread the word, because what's really important for our podcast is that word of mouth, you know, reputation. You know, this show's pretty great. These people are pretty great. They want us to go see Call of the Wild because Kara G is in it. Mm-hmm. I forgot to say that earlier, so I'm going to say it now. Couple things you can do to help us do that are to leave reviews on your podcast platform of choice, be that Stitcher, I don't know where we are anymore, or iTunes or Spotify. Drop us a review. An easier way to drop us a review without actually having to write anything or like reveal yourself to us is to just drop some stars. Just rate it. That'll help too. You don't have to leave a review to rate, and you don't have to write anything to rate. It's really easy. You can also share us on social media. Our new episodes are tweeted from the Random Chatter accounts every time we post a new episode, and we also make our own tweets from our own Twitter account. We would really appreciate and love it if you would share those, retweet them with your opinions. Talk about how great the mascots of the show are, the two cats and the dog. Talk about how great we are in when you retweet it and says add comment. Do that. We love that. Please share our show. It's very important. And then, like I said, word of mouth. Word of mouth is incredibly, incredibly important in podcasting. We can't get out there if people don't know about us or don't know what to expect from us. So please tell your expanse-loving friends about us or just your random yelling people fans. We do that a lot. It's great. Just tell your friends about us and help us get to more ears.
Is it my turn now?
This time it's your turn. Hit it.
If you'd like to join our community, we do have a Discord server. You can find it at randomchatter.com/discord. In there, you'll find that we have a main lobby that's open up for free, and every one of our show channels is open up for everyone. It's a public forum. Come in, have a chat with us. We'd really appreciate it. If you do want to become a member and support us and the network, you can do so by going to randomchatter.com/patreon. And for as little as $1 a month, you can open up every channel that is available to our Discord community. It's really active. There's lots of conversations going on. Would really love to see you there. Again, as we said at the start of the show, if you want to get any of our Tee Public merchandise, you can go to randomchatter.com/store, and it'll redirect to our Tee Public store. The music that you hear in this episode is Ursa Minor by Cell Dweller. And as silly as it sounds, all trademarks are owned by the respective owners. Thank you. Good night.